Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Got another one.
Here's John Williams.
We'll see when it comes your way. That's the challenge of the show, isn't it? I heard him talk for 2 hours. Which one was the big thought?
Lord have mercy.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll get to it before now. Between now and 3 o'clock, this is John Williams. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. On the one. And a two and a three. Here we go. Busy show yesterday, and I'm going to go back to that in just a couple of minutes. I was just looking on my Facebook page, and I see that more than many thousands and thousands of people had looked at my post yesterday, and that is about health coverage. We're all sitting there trying to make our elections for our coverage, and it's just so damn frustrating, isn't it, and expensive. And so as a new hire to this company, I'm now, for the first time, filling out the WGN Radio insurance forms and options and getting a firsthand sort of glimpse at what it's going to cost. And I just, I'm startled at how expensive it is. And so I just posted some of my numbers and thoughts, and I asked you literally, what are you going through too? What are your deductibles and what are your premiums? Because that's the sort of yin and yang of it, isn't it? That if you have an affordable deductible, and then your premium is too high. And if you have an affordable premium, then your deductible is too high. And so the numbers that that are impressing me the most, I would say, are the deductibles. A lot of you, whatever your premium is, maybe it's $300, $400, $500, whatever it is, a month or a paycheck. And it's all over the map. But a lot of you are agreeing that you will pay the first $2,000, $3,000, $5,000 out of pocket. So you're buying insurance and you're paying more for it than you ever thought you would. And you're also agreeing that for the year, you're going to pay for the first several thousand dollars out of pocket without ever even using the insurance. And that's how we're all getting along. I mean, that's the big takeaway for me. You'll see what I mean. There's a picture of me in front of a computer with some documents. I put on my crown because I want to be king someday, but that's not a happy king you're looking at. On Facebook, I'm King John at WGN Radio on Facebook.
You know, there's a story I was going to mention on the show, and I didn't, and I think it's just on your left on the cabinet there. I forgot it.
Yeah.
The number of Obamacare inquiries.
Oh, yeah. I just put that in the garbage. I didn't read it.
Well, you should read it. It's really good.
Yeah.
It's doubled from last year.
Yeah, I saw that. That was the headline. What's the deal on that?
So even though they're cutting back on the advertising and trying to, you know, discourage it and everything, the numbers are going through the roof.
To what do you attribute that? Or do they attribute that?
I don't know, but you know, there are a couple of theories. It could be just that people are afraid it's going to go away quicker, so they want to get on it more quickly than before.
That was my thought. I thought, well, I'll bet they're just signing up now so that if they could ever get grandfathered into some new version, they might have better coverage.
I don't know, but it's just interesting that the advertising is less, the public push is less, and the turnout, at least on day one, which was last week, was double.
Chris Kennedy, running for governor of Illinois, is going to join us in the 2 o'clock hour. He'll be in the studio to, at first, respond to what's on the front page of today's Chicago Sun-Times. Ed Burke, the all-powerful Chicago City alderman, the guy that's in charge of the finance committee for the city of Chicago. Ed Burke is an attorney in private practice. He specializes in property taxes. If you think your property taxes are too high, you call Ed Burke and his firm will go to bat for you and see if they can get your property taxes lowered. One of his big clients is Donald Trump or the Trump Tower. And for the last several years, they've been advocating for that client to lower the taxes. And a couple of people on the city council and Chris Kennedy, too, who's running for governor, is saying, well, that's kind of a conflict of interest. If it's not unethical, and it sure sounds like it's not illegal, it still does seem like it's a conflict of interest. How can you be representing the city of Chicago and the people and at the same time trying to get the taxes lowered on the Trump Tower? Because if you're successful, Mr. Burke, then that means the rest of us have to pick up the $3 million or so that the Trump Organization didn't pay. The Trump Organization should be able to get the lowest possible taxes the same way you and I should. And they should be able to ask anybody they want to work for them. And what do you know? They picked the chairman of the city's finance committee to represent them. It's incumbent upon that person, Burke, to turn the money down, to say, wow, that would be a great client for us, high profile, a lot of money coming in, but we can't take it from him because what's our primary allegiance? Who's like our number one? Is it the people in our district or the city? Or is it that client? And if they're at odds, then what do you do? Burke doesn't seem to be interested in talking about that. We've reached out to him today, but Mr. Kennedy said, I'll talk about that. He's been talking about that for a while. He's also got a few things to say about his run for governor. I got this, speaking of Chicago, in the mail today, and I was just so excited about it. Actually, it came in last night. It was on the kitchen counter when I walked in. You're always a little nervous, aren't you, when you've got a city document or a state or government document, and it's got some sort of color to it. If it's a red-banded piece of paper, orange or yellow, then you go, that's usually trouble for me. This one's yellow. It says, the above vehicle, and they have a ticket number, a license plate, and vehicle type, location and date and description. My description is speed warning, school safety zone. The above vehicle was used in the commission of an apparent violation of Section 9101-020 of the Municipal Code. This is your first violation, so there's no civil penalty. Further violations will result in the issuance of a citation. And then they go through it, telling me what I'll run into. If I'm doing 6 to 11 miles an hour over the speed limit, I get a $35 ticket next time. And if I'm doing 11 or more over the speed limit, it'll be $100 or more. And so I went online and looked at the video. And vroom. It's like a two-second video. It's like a GIF. It's just vroom. And it's my new Mazda without a CD player on Ashland Avenue just going by an intersection or down the street. And you see this flash, I presume, for where they took my picture. And I had no idea that I was in a school zone. It was at night. It was at night. It was like almost 7 o'clock in the evening. What time was this ticket issued? 6:48 in the evening. So, you know, I didn't see any school kids. I don't know. I don't know where I am. I'm just driving down the road doing, I don't know how fast I was going. But they take the video and then they send me this. Next time that happens, I'll get a ticket. This is very effective.
Well, it's very nice of them to give you a warning.
I think it is. Yeah. I think it's very nice of them to give me a warning. I didn't know that was an option, to be honest with you. So thank you for the warning. I'm equal parts thankful and fascinated by the technology, which anywhere around a school, if you're going too fast and Lord knows you can't use your cell phone, they'll automatically issue you a ticket. They'll just take your picture and send it to you in the mail. There's no guy with a speed gun. There's no traffic cop. There's nothing. There's just a camera that takes my picture and sends me a ticket, and I will send them $35 or $100 next time. To me, the most dangerous road in Chicago, at the most dangerous time of day, all right, I've been driving in and around Chicago for 20 years, and to me, the most dangerous road at the most dangerous time of day, in my personal experience, has been the outbound Eisenhower between 5 and 6 a.m., the outbound Eisenhower between 5 and 6 a.m. Because between 5, and I drive it frequently, there's still enough people up to make, there's traffic. Sometimes it's slow, but usually you can do the speed limit. In fact, usually if you're fast and aggressive, you can weave in and out and do 70, 80 miles an hour. And then there's people doing 55 and 40. And sometimes it slows down and sometimes it doesn't. And some of the cars that are driving at that hour, maybe because it's early, they got up and they're trying to avoid traffic, they are coming, Jack. Those people go like crazy. It is the most, you know, you can't drive real aggressively on the Eisenhower at 4 in the afternoon. What are you going to do, 12 miles an hour? But at 5:30 in the morning, you can weave and do 70. And people do. I mean, they are insanely aggressive. Why do I bring that up? Because if you can start taking pictures of people doing 6 miles an hour over the speed limit around a school, why don't you just, I'll tell you where they should really do it. It's on the outbound Eisenhower at 5:30 on a Tuesday morning, because that is not only dangerous, it's off the charts fast. Why don't, you know, they could just boom, ticket, boom, ticket, boom, ticket. I don't know what we would do with all the money, but we could get a lot of money from people if we just started taking their pictures and sending those people tickets, Jack. like, okay, I think this is great. It's amazing technology, and thank you for the warning. I will never do it again. I actually think I will never do it again, at least not there. But then it's the slippery slope. If we can do that, then heck, let's go. Let's go. Let's put that thing up on the Eisenhower. You could put it up somewhere between California and Cicero. Put it anywhere you want. Once you get outside of the downtown immediate area, all the way to Mannheim, they could make a fortune. But I don't know that we want that. My number is 312-981-7200. Lots of phone calls. We'll get to you next on WGN. Ralph, you're on WGN. This is John Williams. What can I do for you?
Yes. Why would you consider it to be a conflict of interest with Alderman Burke, who has his own law firm that whose job is to reduce property taxes?
Yeah, I don't have any problem with him doing that. I may hire him someday. But I think if the client he's representing is, and it, you know, this isn't about Donald Trump, but it is in this case Donald Trump. He's got that big building. So if he reduces those taxes, and it's a subjective thing, you're hiring an advocate, and he's going to advocate for, he's going to present your case. But if Burke is successful, then you and I have to pick up the balance. So
okay.
So thank you very much, Mr. Alderman. I thought you were working for the city.
No, I have one other question. What if it were Obama or Pritzker? Pritzker is a known fact. He has hired Burke to reduce his mansion taxes significantly. And why wouldn't you use that as a conflict? Or was it the Trump name that really drove you?
Well, Trump gets all the attention, right? But I think in this case, it's the Burke name. So Burke shouldn't be doing it for Pritzker or for Obama. You know, it's various shades of the same thing. But if he is working in his personal life to pass the tax burden on to the rest of us, then I suppose it's always a conflict of interest. But if he reduces my taxes $800, I don't know that that's worth our time. If he reduces taxes for a billionaire by $3 million who goes out of his way to run down the city of Chicago, then I think maybe that's a client that he should say no to.
Who runs down the city of Chicago? City of Chicago has done it to themselves.
Yeah. That's all I'm saying.
What is fact? You know, Mayor Emanuel is the one that's responsible for the security of the city. And, you know, he thinks he's going to get Amazon here. Not in his best dreams.
Hmm. Ralph, I appreciate you listening. I'm really glad you called today.
Yep. Yeah, I'm sure you are.
The truth is, I really am. If everybody just said, attaboy, John, how much fun would that be? Diane, you're on double. And by the way, isn't that nice to know that people like that do get on? We don't screen you because you agree with the host. Lord, if we only put people who agree with the host on, we'd never get calls. Diane, you're on WGN. What can we do for you?
Well, Your Excellency King John, I'm giving you some information.
All right.
And perhaps you have heard of a group or you've forgotten a group called Indivisible.
I do know.
Yes,
who are they? Who is Indivisible? I've heard of that.
Indivisible is a grassroots group concerned about average citizens and trying to get them information. And Indivisible has been I'm part of Indivisible, but Indivisible nationwide has been calling people, reminding them about the deadline, early deadline for the ACA.
Yeah, so
that, we believe, is what's driving those numbers up that you saw double.
Boy, were you guys there last year or the year before?
No. This year we are. And I can't tell you how many people I've called. I've called over 400 people myself.
And what do you tell them when you call? That if you don't have insurance, you'd better get on the exchange and the deadline is coming?
We tell them if you don't have insurance, you haven't made a decision, are aware of ACA, and here's the deadline. And if you're interested, here's the phone number.
And people say, oh, thank you, I didn't know that. I mean, I'm not denigrating what you do. Hooray for you. But, I mean, you'd think that anybody that was so motivated to get insurance knows about the ACA, and they know that everybody's signing up right now.
Many people that we're calling are senior citizens, and they may not have people around them to remind them or take care of them to sign up for that insurance.
What is the what's the deadline, Diane? What is the last day for the ACA?
It's in December, and the reason that the government is not doing anything is because they cut the date earlier so that people wouldn't sign up for it. And that's why there are no ads on it either.
I appreciate your call, Diane. Thanks for joining us.
All people.
Yeah.
And one other thing.
Sure.
You were talking about the camera.
Yeah.
The cameras, the gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. The reason that they gotcha is because the city's making money off of it, number one. And number two, they're able to have the officers doing more relevant work rather than handing out tickets.
Yeah, like I said, I'm equally torn between it's a slippery slope. I mean, let's just, you know, put cameras everywhere and write tickets indiscriminately every time anybody speeds. The technology is there. You could do it. But for some reason, we don't. So I'm on the one hand, impressed that they were able to catch me under those circumstances. And I was pleased that they gave me a warning. But you got to be a little horrified that if they needed more money, they could just start sticking up cameras everywhere. Put them on the Eisenhower. Yeah.
I went decades without getting a speeding
ticket.
Thanks,
Diane. Yeah.
And I got two last year. And no one laughed but you. And I got them within like 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And I got one in Indianapolis. And you probably know that little, that there's like 18 lanes.
On 65?
465 or something. And it's a 55 mile an hour speed limit. And then I got one in this sleepy town in Ohio, rural Ohio, where it's divided four lanes. And again, anyway, but I was speeding both times. But so I've been paranoid for a year. I just got free. Because I didn't want to get a third one in a year, right?
Yeah.
So I've been paying extra close attention to speed limits.
Yeah.
They make no sense whatsoever.
They absolutely don't.
I mean, you know, you can be in a 35 and then on a bigger road somewhere else, it's 25. I mean, I've really tried to follow the limits, and I'm sure there's rhyme or reason, but I just can't understand it.
Bah. I think the most dangerous person on the road sometimes is the fool on the highway doing the speed limit.
Right.
Everybody, I mean, everybody's zooming around him. The speed limit should reflect the flow, not some arbitrary number.
You can go through Maryville on 65 at 70 miles an hour and then go, you know, be on a 10-lane road at Indianapolis and it's 55.
Yeah. And I remember when the city passed the rule about cell phones near school zones, Steve, and it turns out to be about 30% of the real estate in Chicago
right.
is close enough to a park or a school. So you really can't be using the phone. And that's not what I got busted for. I was just going too dang fast. I was probably on the phone at the time, too, now that I think about it. But it makes it difficult because you're almost all the time near a school zone. So you're up and down, up and down, up and down. It's 128. All right, we'll pause here. More news next on WGN. 48 on WGN. Let's pick up a couple of phone calls. Shelley, thanks for holding. You're next. You're on WGN Radio. What do you want to say?
That there is insufficient information to know whether either the contractor has clauses in their contracts with the government or she has a clause in her employment contract or employee handbook that precludes political speech, period. And there are such clauses, and giving the finger to any level of executive branch of the government would be political speech.
And political speech is protected? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that there might be contract clauses that protect it.
Or in fact, don't allow it. I mean, I don't know if this matters, but it's an at-will state. I mean, they can fire you without cause in Virginia. By the way, I had an attorney who does employment law, and he said virtually every state is an at-will state. But pretty much an employer, unless they're firing you for race or religion or some of those protected categories, they can fire you anytime they want. They can fire you because you're left-handed.
Correct.
They can fire you because they're having a bad day. They can fire you anytime they want.
All correct, especially in Illinois, too. But once upon a time, I was an attorney advisor with the DOD, and I know, because we worked on things relating to charging with the contractors, that there are some general clauses that often appear in their contracts that would require the contractor to keep track of their employees' comments.
Okay, so let me ask you this. I'm going to take some other calls, but answer this question for me. Would you have fired her or not?
Yes.
You would have fired her. That's what I need. I appreciate the call, Shelley. Carrie, you're on WGN. What do you say about that story? You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to point out that I think it's somewhat hypocritical that they're holding this lady to a certain level of decorum, which the president never never is held to and never abides by. So, you know, to praise white supremacist groups, groom a culture of hate and separatism, and at the same time fail to pass any major type of legislation, yet we have a situation where a woman who expresses her opinion gets fired because it was against a government official who is the president. I'll give you that. But he doesn't even hold his own self accountable for the remarks that he makes and the decorum, lack of decorum that he illustrates every day.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but I also thought you were going to go down a different path with that, and I'm going to go from you to one of our texters. Thanks for the call, Carrie. But somebody said, speaking of the government, John, the government is not a business. This is from 312. Over and over on this show, you equate the government to business with your analogies. The government is not a business. It is not in there to make money. It is not there to pay the CEO millions of dollars. It doesn't have shareholders. The analogy is not right. And I thought, oh, that's kind of interesting, isn't it? That guy that she gave the bird to actually works for her. So while her company works for the government and he's the boss of the government, in fact, even the president of the United States, in principle, is an employee of the people. Touche. Other texters say this: flipping off the motorcade is a super trashy move, John. Good riddance to her. From the 630 area code, unfortunately, the employer has the right to fire an employee at will. From the 309 area code, this is Peoria. She should have got a medal. From the 312 area code, I don't feel she should have been fired. No way did she advertise the company she worked for. And nobody would have known about this if she hadn't put it on Facebook. And even as it was on her Facebook page, I don't know if her profile had where she worked for. She made it sound like it was personal and that it never would have gotten around to them. But fearing that it might, she told on herself, and now she's out of a job. Hey, Michael, you're on WGN. What do you want to say?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think because she did put it up on Facebook, that's where she violated her principle. I still think no matter who works for who, what contracts are contracts, that is just a terrible display of how you feel about a particular person who was elected. Get over it, okay? Go to the ballot box the next time. Continue to vote for who you want to vote for. That kind of behavior also can lead to other kinds of behavior, that which we are dealing with now. They can lead to violent tendencies.
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Now you're losing me. I mean, she flips off somebody. And then right. What? And then how does that? How do you get to there from there?
Okay, how do I get from that to about? Well, think in mind, she's riding down that tire, motorcade. She gives somebody a finger. Well, there could be a lot of Trump supporters in that crowd.
Oh yeah, right.
Taking it upon themselves.
Yeah, that's no. And I get you. I hear what you're saying about.
Or vice versa.
Yeah, you know that. you are right about that. Thank you for the call. There's two kinds of people in the world. Those for whom the finger is a really satisfying sort of disgorgement of your feelings, your attitude, like you're so angry, and you say a word, and it feels better. For some people, giving somebody the finger does that. That's never worked for me. I'm not a finger guy. If I gave you the finger, I would not feel any better for it, whereas if I lay into a good cuss word sometimes because I'm angry at something, I feel my tension just ratchet down a little bit. It's therapeutic that way. Finger doesn't work that way for me. It may for you. But in either case these days, if you feel like you're going to vent and you're going to vent at somebody, you don't know that the person in the next car isn't cuckoo bananas. We've had too many instances, right, where somebody then pulls out a gun or they run your car off the road. You've got some sort of rage incident. You don't want that. It would have been a real story if she gives she gives the motorcade the finger, and then all 18 black SUVs stop and they get out, because that's what happens sometimes. They kept rolling. The photographer in the group took a picture, and that got out there, which is the angle of the story that we haven't heard. How does that go from somebody in the motorcade taking the picture? How does that go from that camera to the internet, right? I mean, if you represent the president's interest, why in the world do you release that?
Are you sure it's a White House photographer or just someone in? Because the press pool would be traveling in a van right around there, too.
Yep. Yep. You may be right about that. You may be right about that. Hey, Jim, you're on WGN. You're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, John, let's check the scenario. Same situation, only in Russia. What do you think would have happened?
Probably not good. She'd be in Siberia right now working on a salt mine, right?
Right, exactly. Okay.
And what is your point about that?
Real quick.
Yeah?
Hinckley. There's another scenario.
Okay, I'm not sure what the scenario is, but I don't have time. I appreciate the call. It's 1:56. Steve's got the news, and that's coming up.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Every day.
Here's John Williams.
What we do, 207. This is John. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Here until 3.
Lord have mercy.
Today's Tuesday, and I'll do the show on Wednesday and Thursday. I'll take Friday off of this week. That's the rehearsal dinner night for my family. And then on Saturday, my son and Nikki get married. And So we've been watching the forecast as closely as you can watch a forecast for a very long time.
It looks like right now mostly cloudy and a chance of love.
I'm going to quote you. I have to give a speech.
Oh, good. Are you excited?
Nah.
Oh, come on.
I'm really bad at giving wedding speeches.
Not the speech, the wedding.
Oh, yeah, really, it'll be great. It'll be great. And it will be great. It'll be great. It'll be great. Ask me again. I'll get it right.
Looking forward to Sunday?
Ah, it's going to be great. Oh, Sunday. Yeah, I get that. Well, I talked with Kim about this yesterday. I said, it's a little bit the finish line. It's a little bit the celebration. It'll all be good. This is an interesting thing, and maybe you've done this before, where you have a date coming up, a graduation ceremony, a vacation, a wedding. All of our wedding stuff's going to be indoors, so that'll be swell. But it would be nice to go out on the patio with cocktails. But anyway, so if you look at the forecast 30 days out, like right now you could look up the forecast for Christmas, and it will tell you what the forecast is for Christmas Day, even though you know there's no chance they know what the weather's going to be like on Christmas Day. And so we have gone from, you know, partly cloudy skies and 58 to 37 and a mix of rain and snow. And as, of course, you get closer and closer, they get a little more and more accurate. Of course they do. But you almost wonder why they even bother to publish the forecast 30-plus days out, because you know somebody's going to look. They want that information. They care. But you don't know. I mean, I might as well start putting out my advance forecast. Hey, Steve, you want to know what it's going to be like for the 4th of July next year?
Yeah, next 4th of July. What's we're going to have a picnic.
Oh, you're going to picnic. Whereabouts? Because I need to know.
Outside.
Oh, well, in that case, 88 and humid.
Perfect. Yeah, that's what I like.
Yes.
Yeah, that's good.
Now, that may change. It could snow. I'll let you know when we get closer to the date. So you end up sort of creating for yourself more, you know, anxiety than you need. If it's going to rain and snow, you can't control it. If it's going to be sunny and 60, you can't control that either. Either way, you're still going to have to get up, put your shoes on, and go have the nicest time you can, which we're going to have. But it's like, don't worry about the weather. I've been looking at the forecast every day for the last 30. I've even sometimes sent the updates to my son because I say, hey, look at that. You know, 50 degrees and mixed clouds, because that would be a good thing. And then I see one that's less promising, and then I don't send it to him. So I've decided not to send him any at all. I used to do this a lot when my son played baseball. Maybe you did this too with your kids' sporting events, and you'd say, oh, gee, we're not going to get the game in, or hooray, we're not going to get the game in, depending on how you feel about those sorts of things. But they're not accurate. They're doing a forecast for a large geographic area, and it's not 100% certain what it's going to be like anyway. So that's my little... So that's what I've learned over the last month, is that long-term forecasts really aren't all that completely accurate. By the way, Oprah Winfrey came out with her list of Oprah's things. Did you see the 115? I think it's 115 things that Oprah likes now. I won't run down all of them with you today. We'll get a little more into that tomorrow. But she still does that. I didn't know she did. And a lot of it does make you think, wow, I do need 12 matching vodka shot glasses with a matching pitcher and ice cube bowl. I mean, you look at a display and you go, oh, that would be really good. You know, you don't drink vodka maybe, but you're still thinking, wow, look at that thing.
And even if I did, I don't know 11 other people who do.
I know. Right. Well, that's the thing. It all looks
unless
so
you just hate washing dishes.
Good in the catalog, and then you think, now where am I going to put this? I mean, that's why God invented basements for all of that. For that extra Keurig maker that we really don't want or need.
And now we're at the stage where, like, well, maybe the kids are going to get an apartment one day. No, they're not. And if they do, they're not going to want our stuff.
I know. I'm telling you, I've got two storage lockers of stuff. We've downsized, but now we're thinking, yeah, but what if we re-upsize someday? we'll want that sofa back.
No, you won't.
No. The president was in Japan when he was asked about the shooting in Texas. This relates to something that happened in Chicago, and I'm not talking about what the president says per se. But, Camille, can we play the president's response to a reporter? He does one thing that's very smart. I mean, he thought he got away from the lamestream media. He's on the other side of the planet. We have this terrible shooting here in Texas. So he shouldn't be surprised that he's going to get a question. But he's standing next to Mr. Abe, and he doesn't – Shinzo, as he calls him. Shinzo! So he's standing next to his buddy Shinzo, and he wishes that he didn't have to off-the-cuff think about this, and now he does.
You've talked about wanting to put extreme vetting on people trying to come into the United States, but I wonder if you would consider extreme vetting for people trying to buy a gun.
Trying to what?
Buy a gun.
Well, you know, you're bringing up a situation that probably shouldn't be discussed too much right now. We could let a little time go by, but it's okay if you feel that that's an appropriate question, even though we're the heart of South Korea. I will certainly answer your question. If you did what you're suggesting, there would have been no difference 3 days ago, and you might not have had that very brave person who happened to have a gun or a rifle in his truck go out and shoot him and hit him and neutralize him. And I can only say this. If he didn't have a gun, instead of having 26 dead, he would have had hundreds more dead. So that's the way I feel about it.
And are you
not going to help?
And are you considering any kind of gun control policy going forward?
And you look at the city with the strongest gun laws in our nation is Chicago. And Chicago is a disaster. It's a total disaster. Just remember, if this man didn't have a gun or a rifle, you'd be talking about a much worse situation in the great state of Texas. Thank you.
That's the, one good guy with a gun argument. I wish the president would stop picking on Chicago because I live in and love Chicago.
Well, it's not true what he says either, is it?
Well, I'd rather him say it about St. Louis. Your chances are better getting shot in St. Louis than they are in Chicago per capita, which is the only measure that matters, if that's your point, Steve. We are not the highest number of people shot per capita.
Well, I don't know if we have the strictest gun control
well, there's
laws. That's his point. It's like, you know, they've got great gun control in Chicago, and the people still keep getting killed. The mayor would say that's because they're getting the guns from Indiana. But
when you ask people why do you own a gun, 2/3 of gun owners say it's for protection. In surveys, 2/3 of gun owners say that they have guns for protection. And yet the incidence of people using a gun to protect themselves is negligible. Less than 1% of the people victimized between 2007 and 2011, I'm reading from a Harvard study, used a gun to protect themselves. So you may say, well, then more people need to have guns so they can protect themselves. Or maybe you would just say the idea that people would have their guns at the ready, that they would know how to use it, that they would, in fact, use it properly, et cetera, et cetera. It just statistically doesn't happen. And yet last week there was a guy on the South Side who was going to get robbed by somebody, and he said, no, I have a gun. And he pulled out his gun, and he shot the guy that was trying with a gun to rob him. So that does happen. It does happen, and it happened last week in Chicago. I was on the South Side. One guy was going to hold up another guy. He picked the wrong guy. That guy's got a gun. He shoots him, injures him. Now the bad guy's in the hospital. Guns win. Guns win in that case. But that's less than 1% of the time. So the president sees that as hundreds of people saved. You see it as 26 people killed. Well, I don't want to start going to churches and think that we'll have to go through some sort of security protocol to get into a church. You know? I mean, I don't know that that's necessary either. I don't know what the solution is. But I'm not entirely persuaded today that the idea that guns were the solution here, and that's the way the press. But it's funny, too, because when the lady asked him the question, I put him in Japan there, didn't I? I guess he was in South Korea when that happened. But they asked him that question, and so he says, okay, if you think, you know what you're doing now? You're buying time. You're thinking, okay, what is my answer?
He did it, you know.
And he did it really well.
Because he did it just like, and this is going to sound like a negative comparison. I don't mean it to be. The beauty pageant answers.
Yeah, sure.
Or a kid in middle school.
You repeat the question so that you have time to think about your answer.
And then he gave up a nice little summary at the end.
Yeah.
And that's what I would do.
Thank you. And then he closed it with a thank you.
It was exactly like that.
And then he steps back, and then Miss New Jersey steps up and gives her answer to the next question. It was just like that. And so props to him for at least not flying off the handle. He said, okay, what was the question? She repeats the question. Then he says, okay, well, if you think that is an appropriate question, even though we're here in South Korea, and you know, he knows, they know they're in South Korea. But he's now thinking, okay, crap, now what do I say? What's my answer going to be on this? And he's studied enough on this. He's got his answer. He knows what his answer is. But at least he loaded it up and delivered it in a measured way. But I actually timed it, Steve. It took him 20 seconds, which is just, you know, what you or I would or should do. He spent 20 seconds sort of reformulating the question and doing a little tap dance before he then said, and here's my response. And his response was predictable and was in line with the way some people feel. I'm reading again from CNN. A study of data on gun violence was released by a Stanford law professor. This is from CNN. And he says there is not even the slightest hint in the data that laws, right to carry laws, reduce overall violent crime. He concluded that violent crime was somewhere between 13 to 15% higher in states that have right to carry laws than if that same state had not passed that sort of legislation. I know that's not persuasive to some people. You either don't like that or you don't believe in Harvard and Stanford professors or nothing's going to pry that gun out of your hand until it's cold, but more than two-thirds of gun owners say protection is the major reason why they own a weapon, and yet that virtually never happens. Boy, this is amazing. I found the stat. So if you said per 100,000, what are your chances of getting shot and killed in Chicago? Is it shot or shot and killed? Homicide rate over the last 5 years. Homicide rate per 100,000. So the number for Chicago is 16.4. So whatever the metric is, that's what you're going to compare. 16.4 per 100,000 homicide in Chicago. That's kind of alarming, isn't it? 100,000 people in Chicago, 16.4 of them will die as a result of homicide. You know what's worse than that? Pittsburgh, 16.8. You know what's worse than that? Milwaukee, 16.9. Worse than that? Miami, 17. Worse than that? Stockton, 17.2. Washington, D.C., 18.2.
Wait a minute. Washington, D.C.
is worse by considerable measure. We're 16.4. Washington is 18.2. And by the way, I'm not even to the top 10 yet. You want to know what's in the top 10? In a minute. In a minute. If you're doing some traveling, or maybe you're the president and you've decided to denigrate cities for violence, well, then maybe you at least ought to pick on the most violent cities. Okay. My computer just... Don't do that to me. Type in my password. Type it incorrectly. There it is. Okay. So Chicago's death rate by homicide is 16.4. Then you go Pittsburgh, Milwaukee, Miami, Stockton, Washington, D.C. Washington is 18.2. We're 16.4. Worse than Washington, D.C. is Buffalo. Worse than that is Memphis. Worse than that is Philadelphia, then Atlanta, Cleveland, and Cincinnati. Worse than that is Kansas City. Kansas City's 21.4. Remember, we're 16.4. Worse than Kansas City is Oakland, then Baltimore. Then, hello, St. Louis is 38.1. 38.1 in St. Louis. That's more than double our homicide rate. And then after that, it's Detroit. And the winner at 46.9, that would be more than triple or almost exactly triple our rate, is New Orleans. New Orleans has triple the homicide rate as Chicago. So maybe more people are shot and killed here or shot here, but we got more people than those other towns. The only number that matters is per capita. All right, let's take a couple phone calls. Manny, you're on WGN. This is John Williams. What can I do for you, Manny? Oops, that's a commercial, and that's Rokan. Hi, Manny, you're on the air. What can I do for you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. What did you want to say?
I disagree with you 100%.
Okay, good. I'm glad you called them. What do you want to say?
Well, first of all, why do all millionaires and billionaires and politicians all have armed security guards with them? If you're in a church, if there was a guy in there with a gun in that church, there wouldn't be that many dead people. It took another gun to kill this mentally ill guy.
Yeah.
The society we live in, I have a concealed carry. I carry my gun with me everywhere I go. Little signs you carry, that don't bother me. I walk in, I don't say a word, nobody knows I got it at me. I feel safe. It's like having insurance. You don't use it, you hope you never have to use it, but if you got it, you got it.
Where do you live?
I live in Chicago.
Yeah. And some of those...
And I go to Catholic Church. So you know what? I don't care what my priest says, the cardinal, the bishop, you know, the king of Rome can tell me, no, if I want to feel safe, I will have it with me.
So you saw what Cupid said then, right?
Yeah, I don't care what he says. You know, I want to feel safe for my family and me. Why do we all have armed guards? You know what? Let's take all the armed guards away from all these millionaires and professionals and all these other people and see how safe they feel.
I'm glad you're listening.
Have you ever heard of a mass shooting in a police station?
Say it again.
Have you ever heard of a mass shooting in a police station where people got killed in anywhere in the United States where someone walked in a police station and started shooting away?
Yeah.
No. Why? Because there's always guns there. These people go where there's no guns. They know they can't get hurt. The guy that did
so
it.
So then in your world, then.
The Batman movie?
No,
what's
no.
The, who's
can
the guy who killed.
More, who's can
the,
I say one more thing?
So, now, hold on a second. What's that, Steve?
Who's the guy who killed Oswald? I can't.
Lee Harvey Oswald, Jack Ruby?
Yeah. Where did he die?
He died in a police station. I don't know. I mean, to me, then the solution. Here's the thing. Thank you for the call, Manny. I know you got a lot to say. I've got a lot of calls on this. But it just seems to me like there's two kind of camps in this conversation. And, you know, in America, we always say, well, let's all just kind of lean towards the middle a little bit and come up with a compromise. I want to know what the compromise is on the other side, because it just seems to me like in this country, legally or illegally, you can get a gun. There's nobody not only keeping you from getting a gun in this country, you can get semi-automatic weapons, and if that's not enough for you, we will legally sell you items to turn them into machine guns. And that's all legal, and it seems like virtually everybody has access to it, legally or illegally in this country. There's no shortage on that side. So if a politician just once turned against the NRA money and said, okay, I'm going to just try it the other way, I hoped that we would not beat that guy up. Don't throw him out of office. Don't unelect him because he just tried something a little different. Because right now, we just have both sides every day, every time this comes up, arguing their side and nobody leaning into the middle. But I don't know how much more my side on this conversation has to give. Like, we feel differently, but we sure haven't accomplished much. Wouldn't it just be interesting to see what would happen if the other side was willing to give just a smidgen of ground, just to see what would happen? You know, it wouldn't happen overnight. It wouldn't change the course of events the next day or the next day or the next day instantly. But if somebody wanted to dip their toe in those waters, just as an act of conscience, I would hope that we wouldn't beat them up for it. I'm glad you called. I'm going to Bob next. You're on WGN. Bob, what did you want to say? You're on the air. Hey, Bob, are you there? Oh, is it Tom? Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hey, Steve here, newsman, expressed surprise about Washington, D.C.'s statistic. That's why the Washington, D.C. basketball team was originally called the Bullets.
The Bullets, yeah. Yeah, that's the old joke. They used to be called the Washington Bullets, and then they found that the name was offensive, that they changed it to the Bullets. That's an old Washington joke, yeah.
Also, Trump might be knocking against Chicago because Hillary's from Park Ridge.
Oh, yeah, you got Papadopoulos is from Chicago. Barack Obama's from Chicago. Hillary's from the Chicago area.
Yeah, all the connections are there.
Yeah, no, he's got no reason to like us. Thanks for the call, Bob, or Tom, or whatever your name is. We'll jump from you to Harold. Hey, Harold, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, John, how you doing? How are you doing, Steve?
I'm good. I'm glad you called. What's up?
Yeah, well, I don't think he listened to the question, or if he did, he just basically didn't want to answer the question that she asked. She says, if you're anxious for extreme vetting, do you believe that there should be extreme vetting towards gun purchases. That didn't mean you can't buy a gun. It just what she was referring to is make sure that people that are dangerous don't have guns, is what she was saying. She's saying extreme vetting.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, no, this would have happened. It would have been worse because – and what he was implying is that the hero, the guy that shot this guy or shot at him, we don't know if he was actually – this guy who actually shot him or not. But
my understanding is he did.
The guy that was protecting the churchgoers by pulling his gun out, he's implying that that man wouldn't have passed that extreme vetting, and that this Air Force disgraced Air Force veteran would have passed. But in fact, what she was implying was
No. I hear what you're saying, and I hadn't thought about it that way. I'll play back that soundbite, that part of it, or after the break here. But you're right. Another way to answer that question could have been: yes, I am for extreme vetting of gun purchases. We need to keep it out of the hands of mentally ill people or people. You know, blah blah blah. I mean, that would have been a fair play in that case, and I didn't hear it that way. Harold, thanks for the call. It's 2:30. Steve's got your news. That's coming up next. Steve, it's 2:37. You didn't see School of Rock yet, did you?
No.
Are you going to go see School of Rock?
No, I don't think so. I think I saw the movie, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't that a Jack Black movie?
Yeah, and it was awesome. It was really good. School of Rock was a really fun movie. We were there for opening night, and I was waiting for Chris Jones' review, and there it is, page one of the A&E section of the Tribune today. Power of Music in Session. He gives it 3.5 stars.
Nice.
Yeah, which is more generous than I thought he would be. I thought it was a good show. I didn't think it was as good as he did. Now, he's the expert, so listen to Chris, not me. I thought it was good, and the guy that plays the Jack Black character is really good. You know how sometimes when you see a show, maybe on Broadway, and then every version of it that goes out on tour, the players all look like the people that were in the original production.
Right, sure.
And it's the same way with this. The people that are on the show all look very much like the people that were the originals in the movie. So this guy not only plays the part of Jack Black, he looks like Jack Black. He has the same voice as Jack Black.
So he's playing Jack Black, playing the role.
And he's really good.
See, but you probably are selling familiarity with the movie, right? Most people are going to go see it because they like the movie.
And right. And in fact,
so you don't want a big blonde guy as the teacher or whatever.
I guess. I guess my point is I'm amazed how they are able to find that many people. Like, there could probably like 20 guys could show up and say, hey, I can do that part. I can act. I can sing. I can play the guitar. I can hit those high notes on a rock and roll screamer. But I don't look like Jack Black. Okay, well, we only need people that look like Jack Black that can do that. And they're good actors. And blah, 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 blah. And yet, son of a gun, there's a guy, and he kills it. The kids are really good in the show, too. I think my problem with it, and this is different than Chris Jones's, Andrew Lloyd Webber does the Broadway version. The version you're seeing, the music is scored by Andrew Lloyd Webber. What you saw on the movie, the kids are actually covering some rock and roll classics. I like the songs that they were doing better in the movie than they were doing on the stage show. And so when you watch this, even though it's, you know, exactly almost scene by scene what's going to happen next, it's not that hummable. It's not that the music isn't actually all that great. The kids are good. They just don't have great songs.
But again, if the producers of School of Rock have to choose, they're going to pick Chris Jones.
John Williams, 3 stars. Or maybe 2.75 stars.
Chris Jones gives the show 3.5 stars. John Williams... Who's Sean Williams?
That's right. My name will appear as the byline, and then there won't be any words. John Williams had something to say. We don't care what they were.
They run out of bus.
Yeah, exactly. 3.5 out of 4 stars from Chris Jones at the Chicago Tribune today. It's 2:39. Let's finish this conversation. I want to do our non sequitur of the day today, give you a chance to win Lou Malnati's pizza. But we will go back to the unfortunate topic, and that is of what happened in Texas, what the president said about it, and what you are saying about that. Hey, Tom, it's John. You're on WGN. What did you want to say on, pardon me, line 5? Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. And you know what? I was listening to your breakdown of statistics earlier with the cities.
Yeah.
And you know what? I do feel safer in Chicago than some of those other cities, and especially St. Louis. Several of my children through college, worked there, and did their internships in St. Louis. And hands down, I feel safer, and that needs to be brought to light, you know, as far as fake news, you know, gets thrown out there.
Alternative facts. Speaking. It's alternative facts.
Right. And then getting back to self-defense, everybody, you know, I've had concealed carry. I've been in law enforcement. My youngest daughter is a local first responder. But I don't always carry. There are times when I think, listen, even if I did have to use it and I was justified, these ne'er-do-wells have nothing to lose. They're going to come back. And next thing you know, you're involved in litigation. You are going to be sued. And that's troublesome to me.
Yeah.
Even if you're justified, now you're spending time and money defending yourself.
Well, you'd better be right about it. You're absolutely right. If you're going to use that lethal weapon, and, you know, listen, I don't want to tell somebody who has a legal right to bear arms not to bear an arm to protect themselves because maybe it'll save them someday. So I'm not in the business of giving advice on that. But
one other quick thing.
Sure, go ahead.
Absolutely. You've touched on the NRA. Yeah. I am a former member of the NRA for many reasons that you touched on. Because I find that they are one-sided, and they just don't want to listen to any other reason.
I know your phone's ringing. You've got to grab that other line. I'll let you do that. But that's all I'm asking, just a modicum of consideration. It seems to me like all the chips are stacked on one side. I'm just asking them to let somebody take a different position, and let's see what happens. Because how much worse could it get, right? So here's the non-fatal shootings. The statistics I gave you earlier, and it really doesn't change much. Some of the order changes a little bit. But if you said murders in American cities per capita, Chicago is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. We're 18th place. 18th place per capita. The worst is New Orleans. Far and away worse than us. The big four in this country for murder per capita. You want to die by a homicide? What are your best chances? You don't, but that's the way we put it. New Orleans, Detroit, St. Louis, and Baltimore. Those are the big four. And then you got this middle grade of cities, which are, you know, got nothing to brag about. And that's Oakland, Kansas City, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Atlanta, Philadelphia, Memphis, Buffalo, Washington, D.C., Stockton, Miami, Milwaukee, Pittsburgh. In that order, all of them worse than us. And then Chicago. You know what's just a smidge below us? Indianapolis. Does Indianapolis sound like a safer place to you? Does Kansas City sound like a safer place to you? Does Cincinnati? Then Chicago? Well, guess what? They're not.
So if you're the mayor of Chicago, I mean...
I wouldn't do it. I would not do it.
Okay.
No, don't get into that game. Because that's not... maybe that doesn't fairly represent life in those cities.
And just, then you're also saying, but you're also saying that you're diminishing the terrible murders in your own city. Right?
Maybe,
I mean, it doesn't serve him to say, well, we're not that bad.
It could be worse. Right. We could be St. Louis.
Right.
No, it's terrible. What's happening in Chicago is terrible. By the way, what's happening in Chicago isn't terrible. What's happening in some neighborhoods in Chicago is what's terrible. Because mostly life in Chicago is eminently safe, and it's beautiful. It's one of the great cities in this country. What's happening on the west and south side is unconscionable. I mean, if I got those statistics, then it would be much, much worse. The last couple of calls on this. Let's go to Ray. Hey, Ray, it's John, and you're on the air. What did you want to say, Ray?
Hello, Ray. John.
Yeah.
I agree with your previous caller on many, many of his comments, but I look at it a little differently. I voted for Trump. And I'm not proud of that, but this last week, he made a comment that made so much sense. I really don't think it's a gun issue. It's a real mental health issue because people, if they've got half a brain, they're not going to shoot dozens of people.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's just my way of thinking.
You know what my problem with that is? And I agree with you.
You're so right.
But my problem with that is that we use that to do nothing. You know, I mean, okay, if we agree that it's a mental health issue, okay, what are we going to do to address the mental health issues in this country to try to fix that? That's what we don't do. We kind of say it like, well, there's nothing we can do. It's mental health.
There's this aha moment, too, when you read this tweet. This is circulating out there, and I can only paraphrase it, but and I'm not sure what to do with it. But they say, in the case of this man, we describe it as a mental health issue. If that was a Muslim... If it was a person from another part of the country, we would say it's terror. It's about hate. But in this case, some people are willing to say, well, it's a mental health issue. It's not about guns. I'm not even sure what to do with that point, but that one has been floating out there as well. Let's go to Chuck. Thanks for the call, Ray. Chuck, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing? I know for a fact, because I'm up by Lake Geneva, yeah. I talk to a lot of your cops and I talk to a lot of your fire department guys. You guys have the best ambulances in the United States. All your ambulances are the top-notch ambulances. You are just like the same as a military ambulance. Your city has paid tons of money to have way better ambulances, and all your paramedics are the same as a guy that just got shot in Fallujah. They can fix them. Plus, your hospitals are top-ranked. Now, with that said, that makes it good for anybody there, but you really don't get a true comparison when you guys got the number one ambulances, the ones, the best ones that money can buy.
Right.
So that keeps your murder rate down.
Yeah. First, so I've heard of that, but that's an interesting point. I have never heard anybody put it in those terms, Chuck.
Didn't you just have shooting numbers, John?
Yeah, I did. Chuck, thank you for the phone call. So I just gave you the murder in American cities rate, but here is the non-fatal shootings rate of cities in America. In a minute. So here it is, the non-fatal shootings in American cities. The previous caller said that while Chicago is way down, you know, the president always likes to remind the world that Chicago is the unsafest city, that more people get shot and killed in Chicago than anywhere else. It's terrible. He said that in South Korea the other day when he was asked about what happened in Texas. They said, should we do more extreme vetting? And he said, well, no, because then we need that guy with the gun to track down the bad guy and shoot him and kill him, or at least wound him, and then eventually he died. So hooray for the use of that gun. And the president then, while he's on the topic, this is, you know, look what you got going on in Chicago, and then he ran Chicago down the way he likes to do because Barack and Hillary are from here. So if you look up the murder rate in American cities, Chicago per 100,000 is 16.4. That's a 2015 number. The article I'm reading from was published in 2016, and 2016 was a bad year for us. So if we went up a little bit, so be it, but this is the numbers that I have available. And I don't know that we would eclipse some of them that are ahead of us because these numbers are very high. In Chicago, it's 16.4. In Pittsburgh, it's higher. Milwaukee, Miami, Washington, D.C., Buffalo, Memphis, Cincinnati, the big six, if you will, or Kansas City and Oakland. Really, it's the big four, and that's Baltimore, St. Louis, Detroit, and New Orleans. But the caller a moment ago said that we have such good ambulance service in Chicago. We've got military-grade hardware and those things that your chances of surviving in Chicago are good. If you just looked at the non-fatal shootings in the city of Chicago, you would find that actually this is a pretty bad place to be. It's just we've got such good ambulances, you'll survive the trip. Fair enough. And in that case, we do move up. But now it's like this. Per 100,000, 88 Chicagoans will get shot. In Miami, it's 90. In Atlanta, it's higher. In Baltimore and in Milwaukee, it's still higher. We are at 88, and in Milwaukee, it's 105. Milwaukee, you've got a better chance of getting shot than in Chicago. President never mentions that. Milwaukee, I'm not hating on you. I'm just saying. After Milwaukee, it's Cincinnati. After Cincinnati, it's Pittsburgh, where we are at 88.9, so really 89 per 100,000, where our number is 89. Detroit's is 153. Oakland's is 232. Our number is 89. Memphis is 247. And the winner, winner, chicken dinner. We're at 89 people shot. St. Louis is at 659. We're at 89. St. Louis is 659. St. Louis, your chances are so much better to get shot and so much better to get shot and killed. That's just the numbers speaking. Who knew the numbers were that skewed? You would never know it just listening to the mainstream media covering the president. By the way, speaking of the political scene, so Chris Christie voted in New Jersey today. And because Chris Christie is just, he doesn't care anymore. He doesn't like people anymore. He knows he's never going to get elected to anything ever again. He may be a commentator, you know, on TV someday, but he's just not going to be a politician, and he knows it. And so rather than going quietly into that good night, he's just throwing grenades left and right. So he's voting, and a lady says, hey, why didn't you do something? You know, she was mad at him that he didn't join a certain township with a certain town. I don't know what the politics behind that is, but it's some state issue, and the lady was mad that it didn't happen in New Jersey. And Chris Christie gets into an argument with her right there. He said, I didn't do it because I can't. As governor, ma'am, I can't. I don't have the authority to do it. And then he tells the lady, listen, go and vote for whoever you want. Because she said, well, why would I vote for another Republican? Because you guys don't even merge these two townships. He said, you know, the easiest thing in the world is just stand where you stand and stand on the sidelines and critique. It's easier to sit here and complain. But you know what? That's the joy of public service. It's serving folks like you. That's really such a unique joy. It really is. You go, Chris Christie. You know, that's the kind of candid talk that makes me want to vote for the guy. Three more people in the line just changed their votes to Chris Christie after that. It's time for our non sequitur of the day. This is a little something we play from what happened here at WGN Radio today. If you can tell me what the gang was talking about on the Steve Cochran show, you win a Lou Malnati's pizza.
It's your non sequitur of the day.
Listen carefully.
Come on, it's time to play. Non sequitur.
Maybe it helps if you're a pirate.
It helps if you're a pirate.
It's your non sequitur of the day. Hey, hey. Come on, it's time to play.
I'm gonna play it again.
Non sequitur.
Maybe it helps if you're a pirate.
It helps if you're a pirate. I listen to the Steve Cochran show every day. It's a terrific show. You should too. I miss the pirate reference.
I miss the show today, but I know exactly what they're talking about.
You do? Just based on pirate talk?
Yep.
Violetta, did you hear Steve Cochran's show today, and do you know what they're talking about?
No.
Kevin, do you know what the pirate reference is?
I do not, no. Okay. I heard parts of the show this morning, but I miss.
Sorry, Steve, we're one for three here.
Well, shame on you two, because we talked about it on Rose Show yesterday.
I think I know. The only pirate reference I know.
Don't say it.
Okay, call right now, 312-981-7200. First person to tell us what Mary Vandeville was saying. Here's the soundbite again. Play it one more time just on your end, Camille.
Maybe it helps if you're a pirate.
It helps if you're a pirate. Tell us what that's about. You win a Lou Malnati's pizza. Okay, so the non sequitur of the day goes like...
Of the day. Hey, hey. Come on, it's time to play. Non sequitur.
I think we have a winner in Steve. Hey, Steve, what were they talking about on Cochran's show earlier today? Come on, Steve, join me now. You're on the air, Steve.
Yeah.
You're on the air. What's the answer?
There was an iPhone app if you want to track boats out in that part of the world.
Yeah, like oil tankers and stuff like that.
Right, exactly.
And then Mary goes, well, who needs that unless you're a pirate? That's a good point. That's the last thing we need to do is tell the pirates where the tankers are.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, for that, you win yourself a Lou Malnati's pizza, my friend.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to WGN and Steve Cochran Show. Hold on. Camille, we'll talk to you in just a second here. But in the meantime.
For the winners, I say hooray.
Non sequitur.
Are you singing along to the song?
That's such a great theme song.
I think
I want to play that all the time.
That you were just, I think that was a non sequitur, which you just did.
I know.
Yeah.
Next thing
playing
you know,
along.
She's going to be doing the 1-800-CARS-FOR-KIDS song.
Oh,
No.
I do that one.
That's a fine sponsor, but we love them.
Love the money, hate the jingle. Love the money. And they know that, by the way. They know that jingle works because people remember it, but they know nobody likes it.
I think it was the first song my then 3-year-old daughter sang. I'm like, wait a minute. You even know this?
Oh, no.
Well, it's got that... It's got that Beatles-esque thing where it becomes an earworm. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got a progression that works. The problem is it doesn't have the same effect as the Beatles.
No, you don't want to buy the album now.
Yeah, right.
Well, I suppose there's a conversation to be had about the first song my kid knew or the first word that my kid said and, oh, God, it's French fry or something like that. You know, why can't it be mama or dada? And the first word out of the kid's mouth is like, you know.
Or the first sentence.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, kids, speaking of sentences, lay it on me. What's coming up on your very fine program?
Very many things, John. Things of great import and things beyond great import, including but not limited to. Ben Bradley's going to join us on the latest on the Texas shooter. You see, he escaped from a mental institution?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, something that didn't show up initially.
But it did show up, which is interesting. Texas caught that because they didn't allow him to purchase guns, right? I mean, there was a...
Where did he get the guns?
He was buying the guns at gun shows, apparently. Well, it must be because he did get turned down to purchase a gun. And he did get turned down on a concealed carry license. So he had a lot of things along the way. So some records made it and some records didn't. So we'll talk about that. Also, the attack on Rand Paul in his own home, actually on his own property. Lawnmower. Yeah, apparently there is some other bizarre turn in that story.
It just gets weirder and weirder.
Was it about
the
landscaping, or say somebody had a bush and they didn't like the bush, or something like that?
Yeah, maybe more than that.
There were several reasons given, which is why it starts to get goofy.
Yeah, it's a little goofy. Oh God.
Yeah, I know. And he's got several cracked ribs. This wasn't like a little spat.
Okay, so they said he might not be able to now vote on the Senate floor on some of these big issues.
Because he can't get his arm up.
And I'm like, wait a minute, this isn't heavy lifting. You could do it from a hospital bed. Yes or no? Do you want the bill?
You can't. Actually, you have to be there.
I think that's so antiquated. That made sense when the Constitution was written. But in this modern age of communication electronics, you could vote from anywhere. You could vote from an airplane.
Yeah, I suppose. They'd have to prove it to you. But I guess that's the way to do it. You had to, I don't know. All I'm trying to figure out is why did the dude next door knock him off his lawnmower and then just keep wailing on him? There's more to this story. That's all.
Not just a landscaping dispute.
And yeah. What could that be?
A little bit more.
Wow. Are we going to fill the budget hole? Remember, we lost in Cook County. We got rid of the pop tax, right? So they need the money. One industrious county commissioner decided, you know what we need to do? Legalize pot and sell it and tax the hell out of it in Cook County alone.
You on board? So those of you that thought soda was bad, guess what? Here's what you got in exchange.
Here's what we're getting. We're getting pot instead. All right, all that's coming your way. This, thank you, John. This-